Never leave fish to go find fish. The clock will eat you alive.
Time for the Angler Within podcast with Roy Bilby.
Okay, so an update on my bass count, my ever-growing perpetual, I can't stop counting them bass count because it's what I do. I promised I would reach the 36,000 milestone in the month of May, and I had a ways to go. I mean, a couple hundred fish when we started talking about that. I made it just with 2 days to spare. I broke 36. I ended up with 36,005. I needed 38 that morning. I went out and I got 43. Just had a real fantastic morning. Everything was working well. And I got to catch them on my spinnerbait, which was awesome. The water temp was up. We had a light chop, a lot of clouds in the sky, just ideal spinnerbait conditions. And they cooperated. Biggest one was just a little over 3 pounds, but I also went out the 30th. I took a student out from the college bass club that I advise, and just a real good fisherman, Zach Althizer, and we had a blast. I took out my blue tracker, my 17-footer, and we ran to a river section and down into a lake, and you really had to work for the fish. The river was muddy. Visibility was diminished. I switched out spinnerbaits to a white and chartreuse skirt and gold willow leaf blades and just ran it through a bunch of grass. I ended up with 9 bass that day. So my bass count currently, exiting May and coming into June, is 36,014. So throughout this year, we'll be working on the next milestone, which is 37,000. And we'll update occasionally. How about your weekend?
I got a chance to see an old friend of mine from high school. We hadn't talked, and I'd seen him here and there, but never had a real long conversation. But we saw each other online, and he saw that photo that you had taken. And he said, That's a hog. I said, yes, I have a good source of them in my front yard. So we chatted for a minute. I said, come on up. So we did finally. He came up with his 9-year-old son yesterday. You know, he was excited because he knew that there were some pigs in the lake. He knew that this thing would produce. And
there are some quality fish in that lake.
The small ones are gigantic. I don't think you and I have ever caught a fish under 2 pounds.
It's a healthy fishery. It's amazing.
We went over into the lily pads, hit the pad area, and for the first time I got to hop a frog through the pads, and that was a game changer for me. I will be buying more of those, as I did lose my buddies.
The hookup ratio on frogs is not as good as with some other.
But why is that? Because we would lose them. I mean, we had them on and then they would let go. They're just let go. Is it a commitment issue? Why doesn't the hook go into its lip the way it's supposed to?
They're hitting a moving target. They don't always get it completely. And what you need to do, and this is the hardest thing in the world to do, is when you see that, the exciting thing about frog fishing is it's so visual. But when you see that explosion, the tendency is to immediately set that hook, and half the time you yank that frog away from them. You have to hesitate just a moment to where you feel that fish has got it.
Right.
Then set the hook. Hard to do.
He said, how did you catch the first one? And it was funny because I watched him. He was throwing the frog first and he kept missing. And so he's like, I have another one of these frogs. And before he even finished, I was like, I'll take it. I paddle over and tie it on. He looks at me. He was referring to me as the scout captain because we're over here at camp. He's like, scout captains, these are always pet fish. He's probably going to catch that one right away. And sure enough, first cast, I hooked up and came in and he said, what'd you do for that one? And I said, I just said it when he took it. But I guess I must have hesitated without realizing it. And I got it. I mean, I think 2 seconds. I didn't wait very long. Which I guess 2 seconds could be an eternity in fishing, but I
yes it is.
I did wait a sec on that one, and the other ones I just got excited and I was yanking it right out of their mouths too. But it was great to see him, and it was, like I said, really cool to see his son fall in love with fishing. I mean, that was, if his kid doesn't have bass fever now, because I know what it was like when I was younger to get access, because unless you're on your bike. So I remember going to a place that had a great fishery for bass in it. It was actually, I'll tell you where it was. I'll give this spot up to the listeners. This is not around here, so I don't care. up in Albany by the Stewart's headquarters. The Stewart's gas stations and ice cream, right?
Oh, okay.
The headquarters up in Albany.
Yeah.
There's a large pond behind that building, behind the main corporate building. I don't know if it's moved since then, but it's still out there. That pond changed. That was what happened with me and this kid. Like, I went out there fishing from shore, mind you, but we caught bucket mouths. I mean, they were probably 2 and 3 pounds, but I was 9 years old. So that's like Moby giants. Dick to you. Yeah. No, it was just great to see him and his son have a memory made, you know?
Absolutely. So. And to be there and watch him get the bug, you know?
Oh, yeah. And the kid was, you know, he was losing patience, not patience, but he was losing focus here and there, as any 9 year old would. But, you know, once we got up on shore, took a pee break, got what we had to get done, got back in the boats for the final act. And they boated 4 on the way to shore, like from like the area where you and I were back to the boathouse. I mean, pigs, all of them were in the high 2s, low 3s, all of them.
9 years old, great age. My son, when he was 9, I mean, he'd been fishing with me for years and years already. We took a trip to Canada when he was 9 years old, and my dad and I and my son, we borrowed a, I had taken my bass boat, but we were going to what was known as a pike pond. There were two of them. One of them was a figure eight shape, and the other one they just called the pike pond. We caught 83 pike in one day. And what my dad couldn't get over is my son at 9 years old, when we got there, I mean, in the wee hours of the morning, there was a dock. My son ran out on that dock and started firing casts while we unloaded the boat, got it all set up, put all the gear in it. We fished all day. We got to get back for dinner. We're going to be late. As we're loading up, my son is still, he went running back to that dock to make a few more casts. And my dad just couldn't get over a 9-year-old kid fishing, you know, 10, 11 hours. And we're, come on, we got to go. And he's still standing on the dock firing casts out because he didn't want to leave. These were big pike, too. We kept 3. We brought them back to the cabin. There were 8 people there. We could not finish 3 fish. 8 people. Good size pike. Excellent memory. So I'm sure my son remembers that. This is part 3. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I was going to say, what are we doing? You said that part 3 was going to be a surprise. And I know that you and I, now tongue in cheek, we both were in on the surprise.
Right.
But the surprise is delayed a little. So
it is postponed. So
we, for those of you out there who follow a lot of other tournament fishers online, and Fisher people, we are having our first interview coming up soon.
Our first guest fisherman.
One of these episodes, we can get a date locked down. She's obviously heading into tournament time too. Did you see that she was just in a tournament this past weekend as well? You liked the image on her.
They got second place. That was good for them. That was awesome. Commented to her, and
she gets around, man. That was in Florida. I think it said Sarasota, didn't it, on the sign behind it? I could be wrong, but I thought it said Sarasota.
Yeah,
she lives out in the Midwest, so central, you know, so she's one time zone over.
She travels.
Yeah, she does. So Nicole Jacobs is going to be coming on the show.
He's a tournament angler, and we were going to get into the third installment was going to be all about her tournament experience, what she's learned, some do's and don'ts. But I'm sure we'll get into that when we can finally get her nailed down to
and she's the real deal.
So her schedule is crazy.
But seriously, she is the real deal. People out there, we're excited to have her on as our first live guest, because without going too much into it, what I love about her. Her social media following is for her ability. She's doing it off of notoriety and her own credibility and not having to, like, you know, dress scantily like other most women that I see on Instagram that are fishing pages. They're all like fishing in bikinis the whole time, which is ridiculous.
No, she's just out there to slay some fish.
Yeah, she is.
And
absolutely.
She does it. So anxious to hook up with her and have some great discussions. So what I'm going to do is cover setting up your tournament day. And that's how we're going to kind of wrap this up and different things that pertain to that. Because if you're going to fish tournaments, you've got to have a plan. And setting up a tournament day, every tournament is different. Again, history can help you. It can hurt you. You have to fish the moment. By that, I mean, you'll hear that phrase a lot. A lot of guys talk about it. Mike Iaconelli talks about it a lot. And he's been able to master that. And that is, instead of fishing the history, you take what you know about a given fishery, but you apply the current conditions. You fish that particular day. I base my tournament day on my practice if conditions don't change. If you're out there and I love throwing a spinnerbait. If I'm out there in practice and we got overcast skies and we got a chop on the surface, those are spinnerbait conditions. Fish are out roaming. You're throwing moving baits. You can catch them equally well on crankbaits, probably chatterbaits, spinnerbaits, anything like that. I love slinging the blades. I like throwing a spinnerbait. I love the strikes. And those conditions are highly conducive to that. If I go pre-fish a lake a couple times and locate good areas where I can do that with a spinnerbait, I'm locked and I'm ready. And then we here comes tournament day, and the forecast is for a high of 95 degrees, bright sunny skies, not a cloud in sight, post frontal bluebird conditions, and just, this is not what I practice in. You have to take that into account. If you go out slinging that spinnerbait, you're probably not going to catch them like you did in practice because the conditions have changed. Now, with a cloudless sky and no wind and things just still and stagnant, those fish aren't out roaming and chasing. They're settling back into that heavy cover where they can see into a well-lit area from a dark area, as we talked about previously. That's when you want to go skipping docks or fishing heavy grass beds, but with a jig or Texas rig or something like that. You have to fish the moment, fish the conditions. I do base my tournament day on practice. Speaking of areas, in relation to the areas where I located fish, if the conditions change, those fish will reposition. They'll change how they're approaching their day based on that condition change, but they generally don't move a tremendous distance. So the areas where you caught them should still be holding a fair amount of fish. They will just have repositioned in those areas based on the day's conditions. If I've been catching them over top of grass beds on a spinnerbait, when it's cloudy and the water's got a chop on it. If I got a grass bed down there in 14 foot of water and there's 3 foot of water above it before it tops out on the surface, that's where they're going to be hitting those spinner baits. But if you got clear skies and it's dead flat calm, they may be in that same general area, but they're not in that 3 foot of open water above that grass bed. Now they're down in that grass bed or they're on the deep water edge of that, just hanging just inside that grass line, watching that open water in front of them. So that's when I'm going to switch to a jig. I may even run a crankbait, but I'll run it deeper. I'll run a deep diving crankbait, a deeper diving, like a DT-10 or a DT-16, something like that, that will go down and parallel that grass edge, but get down near the bottom where those fish are hunkering down and watching for stuff coming in. So you can base your practice on the conditions if they don't change. But again, always have a backup plan, something to switch to if you're not catching fish. Your tournament day is nothing more than a series of decisions that you make that affect the outcome of your day. Whoever makes the best decisions throughout that tournament day is the guy that goes home with your money, or better yet, you with his. So have a game plan. What I do, I've always tried to do this. I try to set up, I don't put all my eggs in one basket. I have plan A, B, C, D. By that, I mean a milk run of spots that I can run to and that I can cycle through and rotate throughout the tournament day. And it's a timing thing. If you get into a rotation with your spots, some of these spots, fish don't feed all day. most days. There's feeding windows that open up. And if you get on the right rotation on your spots and you're where they're feeding at the best time, you're going to clean house. I try to set up a milk run where I can, and I can't always do this, it depends on the body of water, but I like to go down to a section of a lake where I can set up a milk run in spots where I can generally see my second, third, and fourth spots right from my first one, so I'm not running from one end of the lake to the other, because all that does is burns down the clock on you, and I mean fast. You run out of time. I try to set up a milk run where I can see all my spots. I've always had the contention that you don't catch fish when the big motor's running. You catch fish when your foot's on that trolling motor and your lure's in the water. Yeah, you got to run to spots. And if you have to make a dramatic change because it's just not working, you may have to make a long run, but that's always a gamble. I'll get into that when I start talking about fishing rivers, because that has burned me so many times. I try to not make long runs if I can avoid it. I try to spend as much time as I can with my lure in the water, doing my job, trying to put fish in that live well. And you can't do that with a big motor running. But there's guys that make long runs. It's a guts and glory thing. I'm making the gamble. I'm making that run. And sometimes it pays off. For me, it generally has not. But that's just my experience. With your game plan, and this is important, this is huge, fish your strengths. I cannot stress that enough. Say you're going to a tournament lake where you haven't fished it before. You went there in practice. They said, well, this lake, they crush them on a man's one minus crankbait. That is the deal. And it's got to be this color. And you go buy some of those. You haven't done much of that, not your comfort zone. But if that's how they catch them on this lake, so you go to this lake and you pre-fish it 2 days and you're throwing that one minus. Meanwhile, you're seeing a lot of stuff like you just said, we were talking about fishing a frog. You're seeing what we call cheese mats in late summer, and you're seeing a lot of lily pads, and you're thinking, man, I'd love to throw a frog there, but this is a crankbait lake and I gotta do what's going to catch them.
But why wouldn't you just do it? Take 5 minutes and go flip one through there, and that could be your kicker.
See, that's the thing. I would. That's the point I'm getting to with fish your strengths. If throwing a frog is your deal and the lake is not known for that, that may be the way you can win the tournament, because the fish don't typically see that.
Right.
If everybody says you got to throw this color crankbait, that's how everybody wins tournaments. The fish are used to that. The fish are conditioned to that. Yes, there's going to be people doing that. And there's going to be guys that probably are consistent doing that, that know that lake and know that pattern and do it all the time. But if that's not your comfort zone, if you fished that lake for 2 days and only caught two fish doing that, fish your strength. Nobody else is going to be doing that. Go to those solidity pads, go to those grass mats, throw that frog, and there's untapped potential there. And you know what size of fish the frogs catch. It's a gamble. On some of these lakes, you don't get a lot of strikes, but the potential for huge strikes.
Yeah. Just that, here. I mean, I'm telling you, I had only, my only top water experience has been a handful of hula poppers and jitterbugs and the usual stuff you'd get like in a variety pack. Like that was pretty much it. And I've seen the frogs, never gave it a shot. I always kind of like brushed them off. I don't have a lot of the terrain that would require that. So when we pulled those out yesterday, I fell in love with this technique for sure.
Because that's a modern bait. Now I'm going to poke at you a little bit here. You talk about me in my digital camera. What was the word you used?
Vintage.
Vintage. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hula popper. Really? That is such a vintage.
That was lure. My dad's. So, that was my touche. Dad's favorite lure. We always had an abundant supply of hula poppers. I think he just like saying the word hula popper.
They still catch fish. All those old lures that are collecting dust everywhere because of the let's use this new thing. All right. They all still catch fish. Fish haven't seen them for the most part in years and years and years. And it's like throwing a new bait. They still catch fish. I just, when you said hula popper, I thought, oh, there's a vintage lure. Just thought I'd throw that.
Well, how old's the jitterbug? That's old too, right? I mean, that's
oh, a jitterbug, man. That's going way back. That's like the head and crazy crawler I made a reference to a while back.
Well, those are all head and lures, right? So it's hula popper's head and, isn't it?
But James Hedden made a name for himself by creating iconic, well, they're iconic lures now, and with good reason. They caught fish then and they still catch them now.
Do you think everyone around him called him Jimmy?
What's that?
You think all of his friends and family called him Jimmy? Jimmy Hedden? That's Jimmy's hula popper. Jimmy's out there making fishing lures. You ever get any of Jimmy's lures?
I'm sure. Give me one of Jimmy's plugs, right? We know him. We just know him as Hedden Lures, but his name was James Hedden. Jimmy Hedden.
Jimmy Hedden. And, I think we should call him that from now on. Anytime we talk about him moving forward, I think we should just keep it that much more personal. Jimmy.
We'll just call it a Jimmy plug.
Jimmy plug.
Oh, that's so vintage. You're throwing a Jimmy plug?
Oh, man. We're gonna change the whole vernacular.
Yeah.
One episode at a time.
So fish your strengths. If you go to a lake that's known for one lure and it's not your thing, seek out that water where you can do your program, and you will most likely find some untapped potential there that for the most part, everybody's ignored, and you might just find the mother lode. A lot of tournaments are won that day. So fish your strengths, determine what they are. I try to be versatile. There's a lot of techniques that I know from my own experience I'm stronger with that they put fish in the boat for me. And those are the patterns I try to expand on when I have the conditions. And again, it goes to fishing the conditions on any particular day. Now, I want to talk about tournaments on rivers and running the locks. And I alluded to this a little bit with my milk run. I don't like to make long runs. I like to keep everything where I can see it if I can set up my day like that. And again, you don't have to hit every spot. If you're catching fish and your program's running, fish it for all it's worth. And then move on when they shut down. Never leave fish to go find fish. The clock will eat you alive. So fishing rivers and locks, a lot of guys like to run the locks to get to their favorite pool. And I've never really spent much time doing that because my contention is, I mean, one of the rivers that we fish, we fish all these different pools. But in our tournament club, guys go out, there's half the guys run the locks and I stay in the pool that we launch in because there's big fish in every pool and running that big motor is going to burn down the clock on you. And the locks take time to go through. They got to dump the water. You got to go in. They got to raise it up. They got to open the gate. And you got to do that coming back. That's all time where you do not have a line in the water. And there's been days where we were on fish and I know we had a limit in the boat fishing the pool that we launched in before guys even got to their first spot that are running the locks. And that is an advantage. And I will always contend that there have been times when I ran the locks and it's not worked out for me. Case in point, we had a tournament. And just to back up, there are big fish in every pool. There's no real bad pools that we fish out of because when these guys run the locks, everybody comes back to where we launched to weigh in. And everybody brings in their five biggest fish. They get released in that pool we launched in. I don't care where they caught them, what lock they went through. They're getting released in the pool that we launched in. So every time we fish a tournament, we're putting big fish back in every different pool that we fish. There are big fish in every pool. I spend my 8-hour day in the pool that we launch in and with my line in the water trying to catch the five biggest ones I can. Now, where it's burned me is, I mean, we had a championship on the river and I had pre-fished the pool that we were launching in and I just couldn't get anything going. So I abandoned that pool and I went to one that was two locks up. That was my favorite pool. I just, on a second practice day, I went and drove to this pool that was upriver, absolutely crushed them. And it was the bite was easy. I was using a specific lure, a specific pattern that had consistently produced there, and it did yet again. It was because it was in the fall of the year. It was a pattern that was very productive in the fall, mimicking the blueback herring that used to migrate out of that river in the fall. And it was just such a slam dunk. The bait fish had not migrated down to that lower pool yet. So I told my tournament partner, I said, I know this goes against what I've always preached, but we're going to run the locks and we're going to that, you know, this pool, because I crushed them there. We got our program. We got the bait we're going to throw. That's the deal. He said, okay, I'm in. They sent us all out. We ran to the lock. We locked up into the next pool, which was a short one, and then another lock, and then a long run up to where we were going to fish. We got through that first lock. They opened the gates. We went to take off. Fog bank. Ugh, didn't plan on that. This is going to cost us some time. So, I mean, it was so thick. You couldn't see to safely run. So I said, let's just fish here. Fish with the electronics. Can't even see the bank. Let's just... And it's just not safe to move. So we caught 1 2.5 pounder, put it in the box, and we caught 4 or 5 others that were like a pound, pound and a quarter. And I'm throwing them back in the river. He's like, what are you doing? That's a keeper. I said, hey, where we're going, we're just going to end up culling them. So I'm not going to put them in the live well, have them using up the dissolved oxygen. He goes, okay. I said, we're going to catch them. Man, I had an 18-pound bag there last weekend. Finally, the fog lifts. We run up to the next lock. We go through. When the gate opens, we're 2 hours into our day now. When the gate opens, the first thing we see is 3 bass boats. And we go, oh, there must be a tournament in this pool. You got to be kidding me. We didn't even consider that. We ran all the way up to our spot. And there's 3 boats fishing our spot. It's big enough for 2. There's 3 boats there. We try to come in and make a few casts, and we're getting the eye from all these other boats going, this spot's covered. Find someplace else.
Yeah. Where's your etiquette there?
Yeah.
Mr. Etiquette guy. Mr. Etiquette guy. Hold on.
Touché.
Here we go. Here Touché. We go. You're going to say, well, we weren't fishing that tournament, so we could do whatever we wanted.
No. I'm not. They were giving us a stink eye, and rightfully so.
Yeah.
We were late for the party, so we made a couple casts. We got the look, and my partner goes, this ain't cool. I said, yeah, I know. Let's get out of here. We ran up to our backup area in that pool, and there was 2 boats on that spot. We fished the perimeter, and they kept looking at us, and we're like, no, this backfired. We're going to have to run all the way back down river. We got 1 2.5 pounder. By the time we got back down to the pool where the tournament launched, we had 3 hours to fish. We had 1 fish in the box. We had thrown away a limit.
So, right? Question.
Rookie mistake.
Question.
Yeah.
When you've been in tournaments, have you ended up keeping a 2.5 pounder in your bag? Like, do you ever bring those in, or are those usually a little bit too small?
Oh, yeah. A lot of lakes, a lot of the lakes we fished at certain times of the year, because of the tournament pressure, that's a good fish. That's a good fish. As the year, and this tournament was in the fall. So as the year wears on and the pressure is on these fish, Saratoga Lake, if you get there early, I mean, you can have an 18-pound bag. But if you fish it late in the summer, 10 pounds can win, because the fish have had so much pressure. So we'd already thrown a limit back in the water when it was foggy, thinking that we're going to go slay them up there. Had no idea there was a tournament out of Orange County, New York, doing a 2-day tournament, and that was their second day. So,
they were extra not in the mood for your shit.
We ran back, and when the lock gates opened, we entered a pool where I had a terrible practice, and we had 3 hours to get 4 more keepers. We got 3 fish. We got another 2.5 pounder, which was good, but we got 2 that were like a pound. And we ended up, only the top 10 fished the championship, and we finished 9th. So making the long run really, really hurt us. And I went back to that upper pool a few days later just to see how they bit, and we absolutely crushed them, which makes you want to believe that if there wasn't a tournament there and you had that pool to yourself, you would have crushed them. But making the long run burnt me. And we tried it one other time. We made a long run and it ended up the same result, that we got all the way up there, fish wouldn't bite. And we could have spent 8 hours with our lines in the water where we launched. We had a tournament there years ago where we were actually in that upriver pool that we had always done well in. But there was a guy in our club, won't give his name. I always called him the cowboy because he was a cowboy. And he liked to throw a big weight spinner bait. That's the only thing we ever saw him throw. But he liked one of the pools that was like 4 or 5 locks down, way down river. And he showed up to that tournament telling everybody, I'm going to my pool. They're like, you're not going to have any time to fish. He had a full tank of gas in his boat, and he had brought a 5-gallon gas can that he put in the back of the boat in case he ran out of fuel, because he was going through, I think, four locks. And he ran because there was big largemouth in the pool he was headed to. And he loved to fish that pool, and he made that run and they did not bite. And he spent his whole day driving, and he got down there, had a couple hours to fish, and they just wouldn't turn on for him. And everybody that did well was up river where we were. So making a long run can burn you, but it can also make all the difference. For me, it never has. So I fish the water that we launch in, and I spend 8 hours with my lures in the water, because that's how you put fish in the live well. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. And again, we talk about having a plan A, B, C, and D. The only way to do that is to fish these bodies of water and establish several patterns or things that are working, and understanding the conditions that make certain bites good. There's certain conditions that are conducive to your frog bite, to your top water bite. There's certain conditions that are conducive to my spinner bait or swim bait bite. And there's other conditions that are good for a Texas rig or a jig poking around on the bottom. Just the only way to understand all that is to get out there and get fishing. There is no substitute for time on the water. But with a tournament, never put all your eggs in one basket. Have a game plan, have a backup plan, and a backup to your backup plan, a plan A, B, C, and D. The most important thing is fish the moment. And in order to do that, the essential piece of equipment is an open mind. Keep an open mind. If what you did in practice isn't working, and conditions are the same, but it just isn't working, have the courage to just bail on that and try something completely different that's conducive to those same conditions. Keep an open mind. It's hard to do if you've had success with a specific technique and you just, they should bite this. They're going to bite it. I just got to wait them out. Sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. Again, your tournament day is nothing more than about 100 decisions that you make during the course of that day. And based on the decisions you make, you determine your own outcome. And that's basically tournament fishing in a nutshell. But most of all, most important of all, enjoy it. Okay. And learn from it. If you don't enjoy it, why are you doing it? I learned so much more about fishing through competing in tournaments and talking to guys, and the camaraderie that you have if you're in a club. Our club, everybody respects everybody, and everybody is genuinely, for the most part, happy for the other guy when he takes your money because he earned it. And there's a lot of respect from one member to the other because we all know what everybody's good at fishing. And man, there's some real, real good fishermen in my club. These guys are tough to beat. So most of all, if you're going to get into tournaments, try to enjoy it, try to learn from it, and maintain, and I borrow this from G-Man, Gerald Swindle, try to adopt a positive mental attitude. If you're out there and you're negative, you are everybody else's best asset and your own worst enemy. If you go out there and you tell yourself, these aren't the conditions we had in practice, we ain't going to catch them. Guess what? You're right. Nobody has to beat you that day because you already handed it to them. You've already resigned and given up. What are you doing there? All right. Have a positive mental attitude. Go into every tournament believing you can win. You should win. All you have to do is go out and close the deal. That's my theory. I have a positive mental attitude every tournament I go into. And that's why I enjoy it so much. That's why I learn from it. And if you have a bad tournament, in many, many instances, you can learn more from that than a tournament that you won. Success can be a double-edged sword. Like I said in the last installment, fishing history. We won doing this. Let's do this again. What are the conditions? Are they identical? You know, is that going to work this time? You have to be flexible, keep an open mind, and fish the moment. That's the way to win. That's the guy that wins. So be versatile, keep an open mind, and best of all, enjoy it.
Right on.
Yeah.
Well done, Roy. Part three.
And in 2 weeks, we start competing. So
yeah,
I'm anxious.
It's coming up.
Anxious.
If you have any questions or comments, hit us up at anglerwithinpodcast@gmail.com or slide into Roy's DMs at all lowercase Roy Bilby.
No spaces.
No spaces. Until next week, we will continue to help you find your
Angler Within.